Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. This is Travis, and today we're going to talk about something exciting and a little bit depressing. So I just wanted to talk about the coming PSLF forgiveness awesomeness and disaster that's coming in 2022. You know, it might be too negative to call it a disaster. It's going to be one of the most transformational, awesome things ever to see so many people get their loans forgiven. It's not only going to be good for public servants, it's going to be good for anybody trying to get loan forgiveness, because say you're going for a 20-year pay-as-you-earn forgiveness in the private sector. You might not trust that because you've never seen anyone get it. But when you see someone getting the 10-year version of that forgiveness, your confidence level in pursuing that as a long-term strategy significantly goes up. And a lot of people will make statements like, well, I saw some Twitter account recently that was trying to propagate this post that said only 30 people in the whole country have gotten loan forgiveness, you know, with the income-based repayment programs. This shows the program's broken. Well, that is technically true, but it's very misleading, because ICR is the very first income-based program. It came out in 1993. ICR is 20% of your income, and you only get to deduct 100% of the poverty line instead of 150%. Furthermore, ICR basically could only be used on small balances because of the strict limits that were in place at the time on borrowing for student loans. So the kind of folks that would have paid low payments for 25 years since 1993, that's 2018 that those people could have even been eligible for forgiveness at all. So in other words, if you were making income-based repayments immediately on debt right after you borrowed in 1993, then you could have been eligible in 2018. But obviously, you would have had to borrow some debt first and get a degree first before, you know, entering into an income-based program. And also, these income-based programs typically take at least 1 or 2 years to get set up and get all the details ironed out when they come out, too. And so really, the very first opportunity that most people would have had to sign up for ICR would probably have been around the mid to late 90s, because that's when all the stuff would have gotten ironed out, all the details. That's when people would have been graduated with the kind of loans that were eligible for it. And so now you're talking about the very first people eligible for loan forgiveness really being more like 2022 to 2023. I'm talking about the non-PSLF forgiveness, right? That kind of a statement is really designed to achieve the goal of student loan cancellation, right? That's really what it is designed to do. And it's one of those things that doesn't help borrowers, I think, because I think that it kind of creates sort of fear and needless anxiety about these income-based programs, because it's sort of not explaining why that's a very obvious result. I'm not saying, you know, that cancellation wouldn't benefit borrowers. I'm simply saying whenever, be it somebody on Twitter or the media in general, pastes or reports some apocalyptic sounding statistic about student loan forgiveness, it's not something that helps borrowers have confidence in the program and makes people make bad decisions that hurt them and their finances. So that's why I take issue with it. So you might say, well, you're a hypocrite, Travis, because you're titling an episode an impending loan forgiveness disaster. That sounds pretty apocalyptic, jerk. Okay, maybe I'm guilty as charged here. But the difference is this is an actual problem that's going to happen, whereas the income-based repayment programs are working like they were designed. You might say that makes them not effective because we should have a more aggressive approach to reform or relief of student loans. That's a legitimate argument. I'm just saying that the rules are working the way that the programs were designed. In fact, something like pay-as-you-earn, 20 years until forgiveness instead of 25, 150% of the poverty line that you can deduct instead of 100%, it's getting better. It's not getting worse in terms of the direction of loan forgiveness and the generosity of these programs for borrowers. So we have a lot to be thankful for in that regard. Now, I want to talk about specifically the loan forgiveness stuff that's going on with the PSLF waiver and who's going to help and who's unfortunately and really wrongly probably going to leave out in 2022. So when I say an impending loan forgiveness disaster, what would I say by that? Well, something like the student loan payment and interest pause benefited everyone with federally owned student loans without any action needed on their part. There were some problems with it. For example, some people that submitted their tax returns early before the pause in student loans was announced had their refunds for their tax refunds garnished. And people that submitted their tax returns after that March point did not have their tax refunds garnished. So that was a big deal. That was actually randomly a huge source of traffic on our site in 2020 during the early part of the pandemic, was people just really beside themselves, because a lot of, especially low-income people, that's how they catch up on their rent. That's how they pay past due bills, is they're waiting on that tax refund, and then they're not aware of income-based repayment, or they don't really have those resources to understand how to sign up for the different federal loan repayment programs. And then what happens is they go into default, and then the federal government can seize their tax refund. And so that was causing a lot of angst for people, and is really kind of arbitrary. If you filed your tax return by this date, you had your refund seized if you were in default. And if you filed it after this date, then you had your refund not seized and you got to keep it. So that's something that I would say was unfair, but I wouldn't call it a disaster. Other things that kind of happened that I would say are not great, but not disasters, would be getting refunds of payments made during the pandemic when you shouldn't have been making payments. I still, to this day, run into people 2 years later that made payments on their loans during the pandemic that could be money back in their pocket because they're going for loan forgiveness and this money's essentially wasted money. And we're still getting people refunds. It's amazing to me that we're still now getting people refunds on payments they made on their student loans since March 13th, 2020, which is just mind-blowing, because that shows you that, and our clients and our listeners, this podcast and our readers, are a lot more informed than the average borrower. That's what frightens me, is I get that there's a whole lot way more important in the world than student loans. And it makes sense to me that if you're a burdened healthcare worker, you would miss out on that memo that you could have not made payments on your student loans, and you can even get a refund on payments made on your student loans during the pandemic on federal loans. So that part makes sense to me. What I'm concerned is the inequality and the unfairness of how the PSLF waiver will likely be applied. So let's talk about why this is an issue. Part of the issue with student loan debt is that it makes people really upset because it holds back a lot of people towards reaching their financial dreams and their financial goals. At the same time, we know that overall, people who go to college are better off and higher income than people who don't go to college. So in a weird way, student loan borrowers are both better off than people who don't go to college on average. They're also worse off than people who had rich parents or, you know, grandparents that paid for their college education. So you're kind of falling in sort of a sandwich part of the socioeconomic status as a student loan borrower. The reality is some people borrow because what's like the common middle-class refrain on college? Mom or dad says, well, I've got undergrad, but you're on your own for grad school. I don't know if that's like a Southern thing or that's an everywhere thing. That was kind of always my parents' attitude, was, oh, we'll help you out with undergrad, but you know, grad school, you're on your own. And I think that's a lot of people that come from fairly well-off financially homes, right? You go and you go to grad school and you take out the debt because you're going to be a dentist or a veterinarian or a lawyer or a doctor, and you're going to be able to pay it back, you think. And then you find out, you graduate and you say, well, wait a second. They didn't tell me that the average income for a veterinarian was maybe 100 to 120,000 and my debt's 300,000, and that means I'd have to essentially not buy a house for 10 years to be able to pay that back, right? So there's all these surprises, even among professionals that have higher incomes that borrow this amount. But if you think about the loan forgiveness programs, they do a really good job. I mean, really, overall, I mean, I'm not saying they do a great job, but they do a good job overall of helping people that have high levels of debt, high debt-to-income ratios, that have graduate degrees. Where they do less well is more disadvantaged groups. So what do we know about public service loan forgiveness? We know that the average forgiven balance is, I think off the top of my head, it's around 90 to 100,000. You know, that's not your typical firefighter or police officer or nurse, right? We know that a lot of people get loan forgiveness and have very high balances. And that's good. We need people to get loan forgiveness that was promised to them. Otherwise, you know, that's just not at all being fair. Consider this. I'm going to read off the default rates for different disadvantaged groups. This is people with undergrad degrees. Okay. So this is default rates, kind of a weird thing that hasn't really been fully measured since the pandemic started, because they've sort of given everyone grace periods. But this is like right before the pandemic, this was the default statistics according to the Center for American Progress. So overall, they said it was 11% default rate. Okay, but among veterans, it was 46%. Among first-generation college students, more than one-third. Students with mental health disorders, 60%. Black or African-American students, 49%. Hispanic or Latino students, 36%. And Native American or Alaskan Native students, 41%. So in a lot of cases, we're talking about a default rate, and I'm not sure if this is they were currently in default or they had ever been in default, but regardless, it's anywhere from triple to four times as high compared to the overall rate of default. What does that mean? If your income is low enough, then your payment on income-based repayment doesn't need to be very high. Now, where do we run into problems? Well, 150% of the poverty line is only $18,000. If you're single and you are the first person in your family to graduate college, a lot of people are looking at you as the one that's going to help them out a little bit financially. When they, you know, maybe you have a cousin who can't cover the utility bill, or maybe you have a brother or sister who needs some help with some hospital bills, right? And you come out of school and you make $40,000 a year. Well, you're going to have to pay 10% on your income of everything above $18,000. So you're going to have to pay $40,000 minus $18,000 is $22,000. So you're going to have to pay 10% on $22,000. That's $2,200. Now, $2,200 is a lot of money when you're making $40,000 because rents are going up. There's a lot of expenses, right? And so maybe you're paying, and maybe you don't have a great role model at home managing finances as a professional. So maybe you don't know really how to budget and things like that. So it makes a lot of sense to me why somebody who's first generation might have a real hard time figuring out, well, if I sign up for this income based, it's still like $200 a month. And that's still a lot of money. That's kind of like a, you know, a moderate car payment or something. Like that's still something that you might be confused about and want to just do forbearance to put it off. And it makes a lot of sense to me, right? So let's say that person that's making the $40,000, let's say they're making $30,000. Let's say they have gone into some sort of social work field or some sort of nursing assistant field or something like that, you know, like a lower income kind of thing where you still might pay a significant amount towards your student loans. Maybe like a single parent, a single mother who maybe makes $30,000 a year, who maybe has one or two kids. That could be a confusing thing to navigate. Even if your payment could be zero a month or $20 a month with IVR, it's confusing to navigate it. And you've got a lot of other bills that you've got to deal with. So what do you do with the student loans? You put them off and you don't think about them. Forbearances work for a time, but then eventually the bill comes due because you only get 3 years worth of forbearance. And then you got to make the payments. And then if you don't, you go into this default status. So let's talk about the PSLF waiver. So what do you have to do to qualify for the PSLF waiver? You've got to go to studentaid.gov/PSLF. You've got to apply. Before applying for it, if you have non-qualifying loans, meaning they're non-direct loans, which was a lot of the loans taken out before 2010, those loans have to be consolidated first, and then you can apply through studentaid.gov/PSLF. All you have to do to get relief on federal student loans is apply for income-based repayment. You can do it a lot of different ways. You can call, you can submit a request online, you can ask for information from your servicer about how to do it, what links to go to. There's a lot of different ways that you can sign up for income-based repayment, and yet disadvantaged groups have a very high rate of default, meaning that they're not in an active repayment status that, you know, not qualify as a default. And so is the PSLF waiver harder to navigate or easier to navigate than signing up for income-based repayment? I would argue that it's harder to navigate, not easier to navigate. Why do I feel that way? Well, first of all, to know if you need to consolidate your loans or not, you have to be able to identify if you have FFEL loans. How many people out there, how many borrowers, what percent of borrowers could identify if they have non-direct student loans? I'm going to guess 25% or less, because it's not obvious. In a lot of cases, loan servicers just put subsidized Stafford and they don't even put FFEL in front of it to tell people that it's not a direct loan. And the direct loans will say direct in the name, but you know, why would you assume that a loan's not direct if it just says subsidized Stafford? It looks like an education loan to me, right? That's why so many people failed for getting PSLF in the first place, is because of not understanding the difference and distinction between those two different kinds of loans. So people that want to get the PSLF waiver credit and get closer to forgiveness, right? Because they're giving credit to any repayment plan as long as you're employed full-time at a qualifying employer. Any kind of late payment would count. You know, even the older loans that are non-direct count if they're consolidated. There's a lot there that you could do to qualify for loan forgiveness. And in a lot of cases, think about this. There's about, I think, $240 billion of loans from the FFEL program that exists today that were, by definition, all around in 2010, because that's when the program ended. There's 10 million borrowers that owe that amount. That is, I think it's 24,000 on average. I'm not totally sure. Math hard, right? But there's 10 million people that owe $240 billion of FFEL loans. Now, 25% of the workforce is nonprofit. So 25% of the workforce being nonprofit, let's just assume that 2.5 million of that 10 million would be public servants. Now, you have to have 10 years worth of credit full-time in a public service role. So maybe, I don't know about how many people last in public service, but let's say that's just, I don't know, let's say this feels like way too little, but let's just say half of those people have 10 years worth of full-time experience in the nonprofit world. So that's 1.25 million. And then 90% of these loans have been in repayment at least 10 years. So we're down to like 1 million to 1.1 million. So at least 1 million borrowers could receive forgiveness on their student loans from this PSLF waiver completely that otherwise would never have been able to get it. So 1 million borrowers, that's $24 billion of loan forgiveness that could happen immediately if they know how to apply for this. So if those disadvantaged groups that I ran through, veterans, first-generation students, students with mental health conditions, Black or African-American students, Hispanic, Latino, Native American, if you look at all those groups, do we think that those groups are going to get their proportionate share of loan forgiveness under this waiver, or could they get far less than the share that they qualify for? That's where I'm so concerned, and I think that we're hurtling towards a loan forgiveness disaster for disadvantaged communities in 2022. Why do I know this? I see Facebook groups and Reddit forums, and we follow all these things because, you know, we want to make sure that we're on the cutting edge of stuff, giving you advice. And we see a whole lot of very informed, very highly educated, disproportionately physicians, people with graduate degrees, people that are really on top of like the most nuanced things you can imagine about student loans that are getting this loan forgiveness first. And remember, there's a deadline. You have to apply by Halloween of 2022. The first wave that's really getting the PSLF forgiveness, there's people that were already in line for it, but those people had already applied for PSLF and got denied. So like the first group that's getting it had already been seeking it out. Right, you had already submitted your loan forgiveness application with your employment credit, and you were on the wrong repayment plan. You were on the extended plan or the graduated plan instead of the pay-as-you-earn plan, right? Those people have already gotten their credit towards forgiveness and had already tried to certify it because the Department of Education already knew about them. How many people out there, especially disadvantaged communities, have taken the step of applying for PSLF in the first place, much less identifying loans that don't qualify, like FFEL loans, and getting those forgiven? So let's look at behavioral economics to give us an analogy for this. Richard Thaler is an economist at the University of Chicago. He, I think, won the Nobel Prize for behavioral economics research. You might know him as the guy that was in The Big Short that explained CDOs with Selena Gomez. He was on a podcast recently that I was listening to, and he said that when they were looking at, do people respond to incentives? Some people do, yeah, but he said a whole lot of people took extremely irrational steps because of inertia, because of lack of information and knowledge and everything. So for example, when they looked at how many people signed up for their company's 401k match, this is free money. This is 100% return on your money. Even if you needed to take a 401k loan or try to get access to the money early and pay penalty taxes to access it, this is like the equivalent of getting $100 bill laying on the street, all you have to do is pick it up. And they found that only half of people in many cases signed up for their company's 401k matching service. So half of people were leaving the free money just laying there on the table and not picking it up. You literally have to submit a form and sign up for it, and that's it. So that's the analogy that I would use for the PSLF waiver program. the only way you can qualify is if you apply to the PSLF program yourself. You can't pay somebody to do it for you. You can't assume that they know about your service. You have to apply. So based off of this analogy with the 401k match, which I think is probably pretty similar, right away you would say as many as half of people are probably going to miss out on this loan forgiveness opportunity simply because they just don't know about it. Or because the inertia, they'll put it off, and then oops, it's November 1st and you can't apply anymore. That's a big concern. Now factor in the even harder thing of identifying if you have loans that are not direct loans, and then knowing how to consolidate these into the right kind of loans. And, you know, now you're talking about maybe if the success rate was 50% before, now it's probably down in like the 30% range of people that would know to do this, right? So that's really concerning, because who are those groups of people that are going to do it, and who are the ones that are probably not going to do it because they're going to get left behind? It's your highly educated groups of people that are coordinating across Reddit and Facebook that are already doing the right things, and a lot of them are probably listening to this podcast, right? Which is good. I'm not at all saying that's not a good thing. That's a great thing. We should want people to get this benefit, because we're all going to pay, you know, higher taxes long term to pay for programs like this. It's like when somebody tells me they feel guilty about going for loan forgiveness, it's like, wait a second, does your boomer mother feel guilty about claiming Medicare? Because Medicare is severely underfunded. People's taxes they pay into Medicare doesn't come close to covering the actuarial benefits that they receive from it, yet people feel like they earned it. It's the same kind of thing with student loans. Like, we will pay a lot more in taxes long term, either directly or through inflation, right, from student loan programs that exist the way they do, that don't provide any incentives to constrain costs. That's not something that we can control. So that means for the programs that do exist, we want to help as many people as humanly possible get those benefits. So say it's like a third of people that might be able to navigate this. Who is it going to be? It's going to be people with graduate degrees. It's going to be the people with high levels of financial awareness. It's going to be the people that have the highest debt balances, right, overall, where it's just really, really worth their time. So it's a concern. It's a big concern. So a couple ideas, a couple solutions. First step is, you are the best source of information for your friends. So the people that could benefit from this the most are people who graduated from college in 2012 or earlier, because that is the group of people that's most likely to have these FFEL loans and loans that have been in repayment for 10 years, that if they've served in public service, all of it could be forgiven all at once, which is the biggest, most exciting impact. If you know people in public service that graduated college in 2012 or earlier, you should tell them about the PSLF waiver program. Terrible name for that, right? PSLF waiver program. Why can't you call it the loan forgiveness Super Bowl, or so? I don't know, the whatever, like the loan forgiveness football team. I'm just joking, right? The Washington football team is trying to come up with a new name. But you are the person that can get this knowledge out there, which is why I wanted to do a podcast episode about this, because it ends in Halloween 2022. And the scariest thing to me, far more than the ghouls and goblins of Halloween, is a whole lot of people in disadvantaged groups not getting this benefit, and a whole lot of people that have already benefited a lot from the payment and interest pause that are benefiting even more from this, getting this benefit when other people are not. Now, I'm not, again, don't hear me saying that I don't want people like that to get this benefit, okay? That's not what I'm saying here. I'm saying that I want this benefit to be equitably given out to people. It's there for the taking. But the problem is we have to do a really good job of making more people aware of this program. So some of the things I suggested was, you know, if I was in the Department of Education, I would be looking at these disadvantaged groups and say, how could I reach these different types of groups? First generation, Hispanic Latino students, Black African American students, Native American students. What I would probably do is I would probably look first at maybe institutions like minority serving institutions and HBCUs, and see if they would be willing to email their alumni listservs about this. The schools have the data. I have to say, I got this idea from an economics professor. I don't want to share her name publicly unless she gives me permission. But, you know, she had a great idea here that schools could proactively reach out to people that graduated in 2012 and earlier, because that's the people who could benefit the most from this, and just make them aware that there's this limited opportunity. You have to go to studentaid.gov/PFLF to apply, and you might need to consolidate older loans that don't qualify. That's one thing that you could do. So I really hope that there's a lot of outreach done to HBCUs and minority serving institutions and you know the VA that could really reach out to people and try to coordinate getting people to know about this opportunity to apply for it. So that's one idea. We're going to try to build some tools and resources at Student Loan Planner to try to help people identify if they could benefit from this. It's difficult because I'm pretty good with Excel. I'm not that good with web-based programming. So I have to outsource a lot of our web-based programming to groups that can do that, and that slows me down in the creation of tools. We have a great tool that can identify exactly like how much credit you could get for the PSLF waiver, but the problem is it seems to only run on people with Windows operating systems, in some cases older versions of Microsoft Excel. And so when we've shared this tool, a lot of the people have not been able to get the macro programs to run. So that's annoying. I guess it's self-serving too, I'm not sure, because we're able to use it for our consults, but we're not able to get as many people as we would like able to use it on their own. But this is a tool, this is like one of the key tools that we use in our consulting service. I basically made it so that it would search for qualifying credit for PSLF. And so that's one tool that maybe I'll be able to figure out a way to get it out there publicly and share with people. If so, we're going to try. So your friends, tell your friends in public service about the PSLF program. The other group to target is just blanket tell people in their early 30s to early 50s that are in public service, hey, you got to apply for the Biden PSLF thing. That's one thing that might help instead of calling it the PSLF waiver opportunity. You might just call it, you know, the Biden limited time PSLF program or the Biden limited time loan forgiveness or some sort of thing that gets people thinking, oh, that's something I got to get. I mean, that's kind of why if you look at like Google searches, that's why there was so much search volume for things like Obama student loan relief and Obama student loan forgiveness, even though that wasn't a real program. It's because that's what people heard about from like a friend that kind of didn't know what they were talking about, but that heard about it. And whatever kind of hearsay or sort of words gets more people aware of this is something that I'm in support of. If you're early 30s to early 50s, that's who is going to benefit the most from this PSLF program in public service, because that's most of the people that have student loans. And then if you're older than 50s, a lot of your debt's probably parent plus loans if you have debt, and then parent plus debt's not eligible. Although just to show how confusing this all is, they just issued new guidance that if parent plus loans are consolidated with loans that are taken out for your own education, then you might be able to count all of those payments that you made on towards PSLF on the whole thing. So that's one of the things that we're struggling with, is the Department of Education kind of came out with this, did not think through all of the nuances that need to be kind of ironed out to actually process it. And they're kind of issuing updated guidance every couple weeks, it seems, for extra questions that groups like ours have. And so we have multiple experiments going out right now with clients doing certain kinds of consolidations to see if they work out the way we hope they will. And once we know the results of those experiments, we're going to share them publicly, but we're sort of waiting. We're doing a wait and see approach to some of the more confusing questions, right? The other thing I didn't mention in all this mess is Fed loans leaving in the end of the year in 2022. So that's one of the reasons they've set the deadline, I think, for Halloween, because Fed loans out of the picture in December. And the reality is, if you're Fed loan servicing, do you really care anymore, right? I mean, this is one of the problems with both parties when it comes to student loans, because what do conservatives do? They don't want the servicers funded adequately, because then that's just going to help people get forgiveness even more easily. What do the progressives do? They sort of use the loan servicers' poor performance, which you could almost predict by not adequately funding them. They use them as sort of the, you know, public enemy number one and get a lot of, you know, good political points going after them. But then you piss them off so much that they just straight up quit and say, see ya. And big concern that I've got is I'm already getting people that are upset about Aidvantage taking over from Navient. I had one reader reach out and say, I wish I could get Navient back. And I never in the hex thought I'd say that. And Fed Loan Servicing is transferring over their loans to Mohila now, we know, at the end of the year. And probably we'll see that happen over the course of the year. And Mohila uses all of Fed Loan's software and database systems. So you're literally going to have probably the same type of employees at both of these groups with worse systems and worse databases, because the companies that applied for this knew that they were going to be attacked over poor service and a poor job because of how complex the loan programs are. That's why the company Aidvantage is not even Aidvantage. It's actually Maximus that made a new kind of subsidiary called Aidvantage because they knew that they were going to get attacked mercilessly for loan servicing. So they created a new company so that when people get mad at it, the main company is sort of walled off from it. And it's just messed up. It sort of seems like everybody's out to sort of score points and I don't know. But the PS Love waiver is a great thing. Let me say that. It's exciting for the people that are going to benefit. And you know what we can all do in a positive note, and in a positive note here, we can all make sure that as many people of all backgrounds get loan forgiveness in 2022 that qualify for it under the rules. And I need your help to do it. So please tell your friends about the Student Loan Planner podcast. Tell your friends about studentloanplanner.com. We're going to have a lot of content on that. Maybe help share the email newsletter with your friends to get them signed up for it. Spread the word about all these benefits that are coming in 2022 because, man, the student loan payments are going to start again and people are not going to be ready for it. And then we're going to be after October when all these emergency powers that the president has due to the pandemic are likely to end. Suddenly it's just going to be status quo and we're just going to have a big mess in our hands and maybe an extra IBR plan that didn't even help anybody. So I said I was going to be positive. Dadgummit, Travis. I mean, here's something that's positive. Imagine summer vacation in Europe in 2022. It's coming, y'all. This is a big year, right? So I'm excited about the work that we can do together to help student loan borrowers, to help you get the biggest loan forgiveness that you possibly can or cut your interest in the most way you possibly can with refinancing if you're trying to pay your debt off. And build wealth so that student loans don't have to be the thing you think about. It's going to be your future, which is going to be financially amazing. So thank you so much for listening. If you need a plan for your student loans, obviously studentloanplanner.com/book to schedule a consult with one of our consultants. And then if you're planning on refinancing one more time, your private student loans or maybe federal student loans, but that's a different full podcast. You probably need to talk about that. Just note that rates are rising pretty quickly right now. One of the largest increases in rates in 1 week in maybe even 40 years happened this past week. So studentloanplanner.com/refi if you want to check out rates before they go up further. Thanks everyone for listening. Travis with Student Loan Planner. Have a great week.